right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
So I got to tell you, thrilled to see people standing up, thrilled to see the resistance growing, thrilled to see the victories. And look, you look at the shooting down of the AHCA, you look at the fact that the Democrats have found a spine to filibuster Gorsuch's nomination. All of this stuff is moving us in the right direction. The key to me also is by taking this movement, by taking this passion, taking this, well, this organizing and move it into the halls of power, which is why I think it's important that we get good, qualified candidates to run against some of these crazy right-wingers who are dominating our House, our Senate, and, of course, the White House. And not just the national offices, also your local dog catcher and all down the line. But out in California, there's a guy running against Daryl Issa, and thrilled. Because there's, to me, only a handful of people worse than Daryl Issa. That's why I've asked Mike Levin to come talk with us. He is the Democratic candidate. He's the guy who's going to be taking on Issa next year. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So, you know, I look at someone like Daryl Issa way out on the far extreme and say, you know, good on you. We need more people. But really, why? Why would you? You're a smart guy. Stanford, Duke. Why? Why do you want to throw yourself in this jackpot?
Well, I have to tell you, you know, I wasn't intending to do this. And on election night, like so many people, my life changed. And I had not felt compelled to take personal action the way that I did on election night. You know, I was there in New York watching the returns at the Javits Convention Center and was just completely shocked by what we saw. And on the flight home from New York is when I resolved to take a serious look at this race. And, you know, I have two small children, ages 4.5 and 3, and I care very deeply about the type of country that they grow up in. And I'm also a grandson of immigrants. On one side, Mexican immigrants, and on the other side, Jewish immigrants. And I look at Donald Trump's America, and I'm not sure that my story would even be possible in Donald Trump and Steve Bannon's worldview. And I fear for my own kids and our own families that in future generations we're not going to have that strong, diverse America that made us great in the first place. And so I started really taking a look. You know, my background is as an environmental attorney, and Daryl Issa has been he's been wrong on so many different things, but on energy and environmental policy issues, he's been particularly terrible. And, you know, I had an opportunity over the holiday season to send him a gift. I sent him a book called Climate Change for Beginners. Because for 16 years in Congress, he's doubted the fundamental scientific consensus around climate change. Of course, he never got back to me, never responded, claimed he didn't even receive the book. But I had a chance to give it to him in person at his first town hall meeting in 7 years, which was quite fun.
Nice. Well, how rude. It didn't even send you a thank you for the gift. How rude. But here's
yeah,
the
no,
look.
He, I mean, unfortunately, you know, what happened was the day that I announced our candidacy on March the 8th, coincidence or not, Issa said that he would have his first town hall meeting in 7 years. And so I went, you know, as a constituent, concerned, you know, wanted to have the opportunity to attend. Somehow I got on the website and was able to register and get a ticket. And even more extraordinarily, I was able to show up and, you know, he had a raffle system to take questions from constituents. And they called my raffle number, which was, you know, one of those things where, you know, politics, I've been involved for a long time. Haven't been on the ballot before, but, you know, been active in progressive causes and on campaigns. In politics, sometimes it's preparation meeting opportunity with some luck thrown in, and that's what happened. And so they called my number. I got up there. I got to ask a question. He was very condescending, you know, said basically this isn't a campaign event. I said, Congressman, I'm here to ask you a question respectfully. And when I asked the question, he tried to shut me down. The crowd didn't like that so much. The video of it was viewed now over 1 million times on social media, and, you know, the rest is history. We're off and running 23 days in, or 24 days in now, and we just announced that we raised $276,000 in 24 days.
Good for
and
you.
And we did it with small donations. You know, we did it with 87% of the donations coming under $100, and over 2,000 people from all 50 states. We're feeling very, very good about the strength of the resistance. And Daryl Issa, if not the worst, is certainly one of the worst supporting Trump's agenda every step of the way.
Good for you. I mean, because here's the reality. You're going to need that. You're going to need every bit of that because you're talking about the richest guy in Congress. And look, in a group, in a body of millionaires, to be the top guy is saying something. And in fact, you know, Politico said back, I think it was in 2015, he was somewhere near the $800 million mark. So you're going to need every penny of that.
Well, what's interesting is that his net worth has pretty much quadrupled since he's been in office. So, you know, that's kind of an interesting fact that he makes, you know, $150,000 a year or whatever the congressional salary is, which my understanding is he takes that salary, which I also find kind of interesting. And his net worth has quadrupled from, you know, somewhere $150 to $200 million when he got there to roughly $800 million today. I can tell you this, not only is he the wealthiest member of Congress, he's also wasted more of our tax dollars than perhaps anyone in Congress when he was chair of the House Oversight Committee, on the order of magnitude of $40 million wasted on investigations that led to basically nothing other than his own self-aggrandizement. So really my goal, in addition, Rick, to, you know, showing my own strong progressive platform and the strong alternative that we offer to Trump and to ISA, is really to expose his hypocrisy on virtually every issue over the next 18 months. And when you take it issue by issue, whether healthcare or Russia or environment or pretty much anything that we value in the progressive movement, he's been terrible.
Yeah.
And we have to expose him for what he is. And if we can stick to that and stick to the issues, I know that our district here in Southern California does not stand with Donald Trump and does not stand with Daryl Issa.
Right. Well, let's get to those issues because, you know, at the end of the day, you're not just running against ISA. You're running for your constituents. And, you know, I look at the health care proposal that just came out. I look at the tax plan that's going to come down the road. And I think what's going on, at least I'm hoping, is that the American people are looking at the right-wing ideology that's being shoved down their throat and going, no, this is 17%, Mike. 17% of the people in this country thought the Republican health care replace plan was a good idea. 17%.
I'm trying to find that 17%, by the way. I haven't spoken to a single person that told me that they thought it was a good idea, with one exception, and that's Daryl Issa. You know, Daryl Issa was planning a yes vote before the bill was pulled. And at his town hall meeting, as I was sitting there in the audience, he was asked about health care. And we have the tape, and it's fairly remarkable. He basically said, paraphrasing now, that good quality health care is a lifestyle choice. That's just not the America that I stand for. I think that it's disgraceful that people, you know, as Jason Chaffetz said, have to choose between their phone and good health care. And the AHCA, the sham, which is really a tax cut masquerading as health care reform, just in our district alone, 46,100 people would have lost their health insurance, including 3,800 children. We've got lots of vets in our district that are not on VA that are using the Affordable Care Act. They would lose their health insurance, and it would just undermine, I think, just basic values of who we are and who we aspire to be as Americans. And, you know, unfortunately, Daryl Issa doesn't represent those values. He represents a very, very narrow, you know, 0.1%. Forget the one. I mean, we're talking about, you know, if you're not in the billionaire class or the multimillionaire class, which happens to be, you know, Donald Trump's cabinet these days, then Issa is not for you. And, you know, I think in 18 months, we're going to see, if we do our job and we run a really great campaign, we're going to see the end of him in Congress finally.
Well, that's the hope. I mean, because at the end of this, I look at ISA as one of those people who's everything wrong with our government right now.
Yep.
And look,
yep.
You know, I keep telling my Republican friends, please, by all means, take your party somewhere, you know, not even north of sanity, but somewhere just near the sane line. That's all.
Well, in order for us to win, we're going to have to appeal, you know, to a number of Republicans, certainly a lot of independents. And I think that energy and environmental issues are a big way we can do it. You know, we're a coastal, well-educated, affluent district. And when you look across the spectrum of issues, Yale University just came out with a study, very interesting study, looking at each congressional district in the country and how they stand on energy and environmental policy. And, you know, the district, our district leans Republican, and ISA has had it, you know, pretty easy for quite some time. The numbers are getting better, but the one issue that really stands out is energy and environmental policy, where a clear majority, 65, 70, 75% of voters in the district believe that we need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, believe that climate change is happening and that, you know, man is contributing to it, believe we need to reduce emissions from power generation and transportation. So I'm really hopeful that as an environmental attorney, as a clean energy advocate, that that profile, that that background resonates with the voters of the district. And ISA, you know, amazingly, when I asked him about climate change at that town hall, his answer was that, well, he was a camp counselor during Earth Day, so therefore he's a conservationist, but you know, he really just wants more fossil fuels and keep the nuclear plants open longer. And, you know, he doesn't really care about building renewable energy or sustainable energy in the way that, you know, I think we need. He's, you know, really thinking, I think yesterday on your show you said they're trying to undo everything from the 20th century.
Yep.
But he's kind of thinking in energy and environmental policy terms, pre-Clean Air Act. And that really is disturbing to me. I mean, when you talk about a 31% rollback of EPA, in addition to all the other things they're doing at DOE with Rick Perry, this is a disaster from an energy and environmental policy perspective. There's a huge, huge opportunity to lead globally in clean energy and clean technology. And my opinion is we're either going to use technologies that were invented and manufactured here in the United States when it comes to our energy and sustainability, or we're going to be using those technologies that were invented and manufactured in Asia and Europe. And it's really on us to either lead in this industry or to follow. And, you know, this is really one of the key growth industries in the United States right now. And instead, we're focused on, you know, a very narrow subset of energy jobs, which you know, are in coal country. And that's fine, but let's not lose the great opportunity of the energy jobs of the future in solar and wind and bioenergy and a whole host of other renewable and sustainable options.
Right.
So that's just one example of many where I think ISA and Trump are just, you know, a throwback in a very, very bad way.
So then how do you take what you just said there? Because I'm with you. I think we need to be doing more solar. I think we need to be doing wind and tidal and all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
To get away from the fossil fuels. But how do you message that in a way, Mike, that that resonates and is simplistic? Because look, drill, baby, drill is easy to remember. It's easy to regurgitate. There's action there. How do you get that kind of messaging on our side?
Well, I think the good news is, you know, I'm in Southern California in an area where the messaging has already taken hold and where people are already, you know, changing their lifestyle habits in pretty profound ways. You know, we passed a 50% renewable portfolio standard in California. We just also passed a mandate to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by roughly 40% over the next 15 years. So the messaging is working here. In terms of the rest of the country, I think there's a lot of good work being done. You know, frankly, it should not be a partisan issue. And when you look at some of the background of some of the solutions, like cap and trade, for example, cap and trade was actually devised by Boyden Gray and George H.W. Bush and others to deal with acid rain. It's a market-based solution, but it was, you know, vilified as somehow being, you know, contradictory to capitalism. And that's just one example. I think there's former Congressman Inglis has the revenue neutral carbon tax, which is an interesting idea. There's it really should not be a partisan issue to have clean air and clean water. This is something that people, you know, good folks of both sides ought to come together, if nothing else, to demand that we have clean air and water. And when you see, you know, EPA and the things like the stream protection rule being gutted, or the ability for oil companies to, you know, send money overseas without disclosure, very, very concerning. And frankly, the subsidies that we still provide the oil and gas industries are concerning to me, particularly at a time when we're cutting subsidies for renewables and sustainable energy choices. So
yeah, it's insane.
I think
it?
We just, yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. But here's the thing: you know, the people who are against clean air and clean water are the ones who are going to sell it to you. I mean, at the end of the day, to me, you look at all of the things that conservatives and Republicans used to be for, you know, market-based stuff of the past, the ACA, for example, that suddenly, all of a sudden today, they seem to be against.
Yeah, you know, I think it comes down to something really simple, which is we either believe in science or we don't. And, you know, I believe strongly in the overwhelming scientific consensus that, you know, climate is driven by human activity. I'll be an outspoken opponent of the Trump administration and of ISA and anybody else who's trying to undermine our global leadership on climate and on sustainable energy policy. And, You know, ISA has a lifetime record of 4 from the League of Conservation Voters, and I'm kind of curious where he got the 4, because when I look at his voting record, you know, he doesn't have a single vote in favor of a clean environment. It's amazing, Rick. I don't know if you've seen something called the Trump score, but 538, you know, Nate Silver got beat up pretty good with the election and the results of the election. But he put up something on his website called the Trump score. And what they do is they look at the 115th Congress. They look at every vote. I think there's probably 50 or 60 votes. And they score each member of Congress on whether or not they've supported Trump or not. 100 out of 100 means that you've supported Trump on every single bill. There aren't that many members of Congress with 100, but Darrell Issa is one of them. Why that's so shocking is that his district certainly does not support that. In fact, Silver's analysis says that, you know, if he were really representing the interests of the district, he'd be around a 42 or a 44. He'd represent Trump some of the time, but certainly not all. I would certainly, as a member of Congress, have a lot different Trump score. But Issa, he really is a one-trick pony in the sense that for years and years, all he knew to do was attack Obama, call them the most corrupt administration, attack others in the Democratic Party. And now that he's actually in power and has to govern, it's like he doesn't know what to do. And he has Trump's back, not the residents of our district.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, it's just not Issa who did that for 8 years to Obama and has no idea what to do. It seems to be a good portion of the Republican Party, which, is, again, I hope people across the country will do as you have done and step forward and say, I'm going to be the guy to take him out. So, you know, here's the thing, and this is, you know, kind of the last line of questioning and thought here. How do you get that message out to folks? I mean, I know a lot of people are saying social media, that's what we should be doing. But how do you get that message out to a broad base? And how do we narrow it down to where you're not spending, you know, a lot of verbiage on it?
Well, I think there's only one way that you know, I've been involved in politics for about 20 years. There's only one way I've seen that ever really works. And you just have to get out there with shoe leather and talk to people. So you literally have to have hundreds of community meetings, you know, house parties, neighborhood meetings. You just have to get out there and speak to people on their level. And I worry a lot about civic engagement. You know, how are we going to convert? You asked the question, I think you're right on the money. How are we going to convert all the activity that's going on out there with the marches, with Indivisible, with, you know, the other organizations that have popped up and convert it into votes? And you know, again, I think our values as a country are under attack. And we didn't talk about Russiagate, but when you look at what Darrell Issa has done, he went on Bill Maher and he said for 3 days that we needed a special prosecutor. He told Bill Maher, you know, that Sessions needed to recuse himself because of his ties to the campaign and that a special prosecutor was needed.
He got it
three
right.
days later, he backtracked on that. And he said, well, we only need a special prosecutor if a crime has been committed. And since then, what he's basically said is very little, but he said, you need an independent investigation. But, oh, by the way, his pal Devin Nunes and his other pal Richard Burr, both of whom were very involved on Trump's campaign and endorsed Trump, as Issa did, that's his idea of independence. So my question for Issa, if I had the chance to ask it, how are any of you independent? Why don't we need, you know, how can we have an objective discussion when all of you we're in the bag for Trump and fully support his agenda? Makes no sense, Rick.
It doesn't. And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I had forgotten that he had come out and said we need an independent investigation. And at the time he did it, I said, you know, good on him. He's on the right side of this, only to hear now that, well, you know, maybe not so much.
Well, he was on the right side, like I said, for about 3 days. And, you know, then his partisanship got the best of him. And then he, you know, basically has had Devin Nunes' back ever since. He won't call out any of the dark forces in his party, whether it's Steve King or Steve Bannon or anything else. You know, he's basically in lockstep with Trump, and he's a full-blown Trump apologist. He's trying to walk a more moderate line in rhetoric, but in reality and in voting record, what he actually does is far more important than what he says. What he says isn't particularly encouraging, but what he's done is, you know, 100% behind Trump every step of the way. And Trump in our district is not popular. Hillary Clinton won our district by 7.4%. Donald Trump's approval rating, I think if you did it right now in our district, is probably below 30%. So to the extent that Darrell Issa is going to tie himself and his success or failure in the 2018 election to Donald Trump, I like our odds. You know, it's a unlikely scenario that Donald Trump at 70 years old will stop the fundamental habits that he's had for his entire life. I don't expect him to stop tweeting on Saturday mornings and saying ridiculous things. And I hope everybody got a chance to read the four-part L.A. Times series on Trump.
Good stuff.
Over the last several days, which calls him out for all of his own hypocrisy and his own dangerous behavior.
Yeah, all good stuff. And the hope is that, come next November, maybe Daryl Issa is handing out bags through a fast food window like I saw him do a couple of weeks ago.
That's right. Well, he did it for one day, yeah. And, I'm not sure he enjoyed the experience. It's probably the first time and maybe the last, but, maybe he'll find early retirement to be more rewarding than actually trying to represent the constituents of his district.
And actually trying to do some work. But, Mike Levin, I appreciate you taking time. I'd love to have you come back and talk with us as this continues down the road. Thanks so much.
You got it. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks so much. MikeLevin.com or .org, the website. We'll get links at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Mike's name. Take you right there. Great stuff. Hopefully, folks will throw him a couple bucks and help support the campaign. Because look, you're talking about the wealthiest guy in Congress he's running against. And look, as he's laid it out, I think there's a great opportunity maybe to send Daryl to the fast food window. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.